I'm Julie Kraftchick.
And I'm Yue Xu. This is The Psychology of Relationships. Once I'm in a relationship, then I'll be happy. It's a belief so many of us hold, quietly or loudly, that love will finally unlock our sense of worth, peace, or joy. But spoiler alert, it doesn't always work that way. It's not to say that relationships won't bring you happiness, especially when you're with the right partner, but it's up to us to increase our happiness baselines through our own self-worth. We know through hedonic adaptation, our brains will return to a baseline level of happiness, even after major life changes like falling in love, getting married, or achieving a long-desired goal. That initial joy fades faster than we expect, and suddenly, we're looking for the next thing to make us feel better. We think being in a relationship, or better yet, being married, is key to our happiness, but a study by Michigan State University professor Richard Lucas reported that on average, people only got a 1/10 of a point bump in happiness on an 11-point scale when they got married. Now, that's less than 1% for any math nerds out there. The study also found that just as many people reported being less happy post-marriage as reported being more content after they tied the knot. In short, marriage made the same number of people happier as it did less happy. In this episode, we're joined by Rob Mack, celebrity happiness coach, author, and expert in positive psychology, to explore why happiness doesn't begin after the relationship. It starts within. We talk about how to build happiness that's self-sourced and sustainable, how to leave relationships that drain you, and why it's essential to choose a partner who supports your happiness rather than expecting them to supply it. Because real love isn't about filling a void. When two people come together already full, grounded in their own joy, purpose, and self-worth, they're not trying to complete each other. Instead, they're choosing to support each other. That's the foundation of a healthy, resilient relationship, one built not on neediness, but on mutual respect, emotional maturity, and interdependence, not dependence. Now, remember to go to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a rating and review, and better yet, a comment about what you learned from this episode. This is The Psychology of Relationships, and you're listening to an episode that just might change the way you show up for love. Enjoy! At the end of the day, on our podcast, anything we talk about, it all is geared towards the goal of happiness. Everybody just wants to be happy, right? There's nobody out there that's like raising their hand saying, no, I'd rather be emo all my life. So outside of everything that's expected of us when it comes to dating, relationships, and marriage, ultimately, we're looking for our person. And some of us believe that our person will also make us happy. So we can debate that a little bit later if we want to. But we are talking to Rob Mack. Hi, Rob.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're so excited.
I'm just happy seeing your face because
exactly.
You have such a big smile. Happiness and happy are words that are thrown around a lot. And I actually had to look up the definition because what is the definition of happiness? Happiness is a feeling or showing pleasure or contentment. What a crazy definition. Or fortunate and convenient is another definition of happiness. This is not good definitions. It does not even do the word any justice. So, Rob, how would you describe or define what happiness is?
I would say that happiness is peaceful aliveness, right? So it's the experience of peaceful aliveness that underlies all experiences, conditions, circumstances, thoughts, feelings, sensations, perceptions, all of that. And so I'd say that happiness isn't just what you do or what you feel or what you think. Happiness is essentially what you are. Yeah.
I like
that. That can feel a little abstract and esoteric for folks, I think. But yeah, it's sort of the very essence and very core of who and what you are. And so another word for happiness is simply peace or life peacefulness. But it's definitely a peace that feels alive.
I like that better than contentment.
Yeah, I think a lot of us probably think of happiness or experience it as something that can sometimes feel a little saccharine, right? It feels a little inauthentic, or it feels like it's just about this emotional roller coaster that we take and experience. So it's a high of some kind. It's an emotional high, or we might associate it with pleasure. You know, happiness is pleasurable, but it doesn't equate to pleasure, right? Happiness feels good, But it's not only good feelings. You know, there's a deeper felt sense of peaceful aliveness that's lasting, meaningful, and abiding that underscores and underlies all experiences. But that's not something I knew at the beginning of my happiness journey.
So that brings us to a good question, because I'm dying to know. What got you into kind of the happiness industry? Were you always just happy-go-lucky, or what was your story?
I was suicidal, believe it or not. So I am likely person to be a happiness coach. I mean, I feel like I was born unhappy. I was deeply depressed and stressed out, anxious, self-loathing, self-hating, insecure. I thought I would grow out of it. You know, I thought, oh, I'll do okay, maybe hopefully academically, athletically, socially, eventually financially. And all of that happened. You know, I did do pretty well in the sports field. I did well in the classroom. I eventually had some friends. I had a girlfriend. I had a great consulting job. But dysphoria, which really became depression, eventually got worse and worse. And I eventually got to a place where I was seriously suicidal. So I was experiencing suicidal ideation dozens of times a day. And so to a place where I decided I was going to do some research. And so I looked for a means or a method to kill myself that I had access to that didn't feel too violent. Decided I was going to slash my wrist. So went to the kitchen, got a kitchen knife, dug into my wrist. Still have the suicide test marks there on my wrist to this day. But something very strange and unpredictable happened in the middle of that experience, which is that for no good reason, without the external conditions or circumstances of my life changing at all. I mean, I had a pretty good life externally, objectively. On the inside, I just felt this sense of peace and joy and inexplicable love that I hadn't really ever experienced before. So in that moment, I decided I was going to postpone suicide for just like 15 minutes. Like it wasn't very long, you know, even that felt like a very tall, vicious order. And it felt nearly impossible to wait that long. But I did some research in that period of time. And before long, I discovered, most importantly, that I wasn't alone and that there were some people out there that were much wiser and maybe smarter than me that had figured out a way out.
So you could come back from it, you've realized.
How old were you?
I was in my early 20s.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Wow, that's quite the story. I've been reading a lot recently about how when we are in the womb, we're the happiest. All of our needs are taken care of. You don't feel alone because you're tethered to another human being. And once we come out of the womb, we spend our lifetime chasing that feeling again. And I can definitely attest to the fact that I've been there as well. And it's a very dark place to be. And to feel that loneliness is absolutely profound. So it's an incredible story. Thank you so much for telling us that. And what about your current clients who come to you for happiness coaching, I guess you could call it? Are they also in a similar spot?
Some of them are. Lots of them aren't, but they all share this roller coaster ride that is life. And so they experience the ups and the downs. And most of them, I'd say without question, want to experience more ups than downs, right? But not all of them are suicidal or depressed by a long stretch, but lots of them, all of them are very familiar with stress and anxiety and insecurity and frustration, overwhelm, right? So yeah, I mean, I think to be alive is to, I think, recognize and experience the frustration often of dealing with and navigating life. And that's what they all share in common.
Well, I think one of the reasons why dating can be so difficult is that it shines a light to all of that. Mm-hmm. It's not really just about, you know, meeting other people. It's about really getting up with all your insecurities and fears and all the deep stuff that we've been suppressing for years. Like, how do you see, you know, clients come to you in regards to dating with happiness?
Such a great question, Julie. I mean, I initially set out to be a happiness coach, mostly because I was trying to be happy myself. And so I didn't decide I was going to be a happiness coach. I just wanted to be happy. And then over time, people noticed that no matter what I was up to, I was always carrying around my, like, don't kill yourself books. You know, I was keeping my little journal about, you know, I was tracking the happiness activities that were working and the ones that weren't. And so I always thought, well, maybe I'll help people by becoming a happiness coach. But interestingly enough, most people, even to this day, that reach out to me, reach out because they're having relationship problems or dating problems of some kind, right? And so most of us associate or confound happiness with relationship problems or with relationship fulfillment in some way. So I'd say that most all of the people that I talk to are mostly frustrated by other people or the lack thereof.
Absolutely.
Right, yeah. Right. Interesting.
So how do you help people relinquish that control where people feel like my happiness is dependent on finding someone else or dependent on someone else's behavior? How do you change their mindset?
Yeah, so it's such a great question. I think first and foremost, we just start with the data points we've already all gathered. So if you look into the past, look into your life, notice how many things you've prayed for or hoped for or set intentions around or visualized or wanted that you now have. And then notice how you're no happier as a result of that. In fact, to a large extent, lots of people are much less happy as a result of all these realized goals and dreams and desires. And so just recognizing that alone, that there's no amount of money, no amount or degree of youth or beauty that will ultimately lead you to living a happy life in a lasting, meaningful, and abiding way. Just recognizing that alone, I think, is pretty convincing. But then there's the piece around science as well, right? We have lots of scientific data at this point, at least over 2 decades worth, you know, from places like University of Pennsylvania and Harvard and Claremont and University of Michigan. And, you know, all that science basically says that no successful condition or combination of successful conditions will ever guarantee you happiness. In fact, there's a formula, a happiness formula, and we know that only about 10% of your happiness is attributable to conditions. So circumstances, conditions at all, 10%. And that's best case scenario. So imagine your most perfect and ideal life, whatever it is, right? Whatever that is, would only account for 10% of how happy or unhappy you are.
And what's the other 90%?
Yeah, so the other 90% is perfectly malleable. 50% is actually genetic. So we're all wired, yes, for more or less happiness. But that genetic component is itself changeable and plastic, which means that it's not like height or eye color that you can't really change, right? It's something that's completely changeable. And you can change it by the people that you hang out with and exercises, activities that you participate in, foods you eat, all that good stuff. So that's 50%. The other 40% is the voluntary stuff, right? So it's the choices you make around gratitude and again, the people you hang out with and all that good stuff. So really 90% perfectly within your control. And I'd argue that 10% also a lot more within our control than we realized. If we're going to spend our time, energy, and very precious life on this planet trying to be happy, we don't want to spend it all or most of it just trying to rearrange or organize the sort of decks on the Titanic.
So would you say it's fair to say that 90% is just mindset, like how you view your current situation, or is it a little more complex than that?
I'd say that's a great way of describing it in a very simple way. I'd say at the end of the day, it's we can think about it in a number of ways. One is happiness is what you do. So in the beginning of our journey, it's like if you're doing things that make you miserable, that aren't a good fit for you, and you're pursuing a career that is just not a good match or in alignment with your personality or signature strengths, you're going to find it hard to be happy, right? So happiness is definitely about doing happy things, if at all possible. But then the second level is it's also about spending time with happy people or supportive people, loving people, encouraging people, healthy people, right? So there's that piece of it. But then the third level is definitely really about entertaining or at least exploring better feeling stories about your life and about the world in general, but in a way that's still true. So that is about mindset, right? So it's about optimism and about gratitude and about hope, no question about it. But there's a fourth level, and generally science doesn't talk too much about this, but it's not just about happiness producing activities and happiness supporting individuals and people in your life and about happy thoughts. It's also about no thoughts, right? There are periods in our life or a day where we're not thinking at all. And if you notice more and more of those periods of no mind or no thought, you'll see how you're already perfectly at peace and happy already without having to do any of the other things.
I don't know if I ever have a moment where I don't have any thoughts. This is why I'm so bad at meditation. And this is probably why I should take up meditation. I don't know,
exactly.
Julie, are you the same? Like, my mind is always racing.
No, it's always the people that can't do meditation that should be doing meditation.
That's right. It's kind of like lifting weights. It's like, you know, we can say, oh, I can't lift that 5 pounds. But the only reason we can't lift that 5 pounds is because we haven't tried lifting that 5 pounds often enough.
Right.
So, and the other thing just to say real quickly is that all of us have gaps in our thoughts all day long, but we don't notice them. We usually rush past them, you know, too quickly. So when you're experiencing tremendous pain or tremendous pleasure, there often is just a moment or a micro moment when your mind is perfectly still and quiet. And if you were to notice those gaps in the traffic of your mind more consistently, you would quickly discover that the gaps widen and they also become more frequent. And in those gaps is essentially, you know, these pregnant pauses. And those pregnant pauses are really full of, like, we'll call it a bundle of joy, but it's happiness.
So we hear people all the time that's like, once I'm in a relationship, I'll be happy. Or once I'm married, I'll be happy. Or once I have kids, I'll be happy. Would you put that in like the 10% that's more circumstance?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, really, when you think about it, anything that you imagine will make you happy in the future, while it seems like an opportunity to be happy later, is really mostly an obstacle to being happy right now. So any of those if-then statements generally are a good indication that you're placing your happiness in the future in somebody or something else other than yourself. And that is the primary cause of your unhappiness itself.
Right. So what about people that are single that just hate being single? Like, how can you feel like happy in your current life stage or your situation or, you know, whatever it is, whatever stage you don't want to be in, essentially?
Yeah. I'd say the first thing is try to take your power back and stop, if you can, outsourcing what you feel to anybody or anything else, or the lack of anything or anybody else. And one way to do it simply is just to create a list called your happiness islands. Those are things, people, places that allow you to feel inspired, energized, uplifted, happy for no good reason, just for their own sake. And do what you can to spend more time with those people, activities, people, you know, in places. Also, notice the things that make you feel really miserable or drained for no good reason. We call those your happiness deserts. And do everything you can to spend less time with those people, activities, and places, right? And so that's a good first step, is just to begin to notice all of the incredible reasons that you have to be happy today, despite not having a partner or relationship.
Do you believe that happiness can be addictive, that people want to keep chasing it but for the wrong reasons? And I ask this because I feel like once I feel happy, I want to constantly feel that feeling. So I'm chasing after people, things to make me feel that again, but that's not realistic.
Well, yeah, I mean, and you bring up such a great question. You know, I love it so much. I mean, we become addicted to pleasure. What, you know, happiness, I would say we're not addicted to, only because it's something that is within us and that is essentially us. And so it's instead, I would say, you know, again, happiness is what you are. If you find yourself chasing a high of any kind, that's fine. You know, don't judge yourself for it, but also realize and recognize that that's not happiness. Like, anticipation or pleasure isn't happiness. Happiness is pleasurable and it can be full of anticipation, but it's not the same thing.
Okay, light bulb moment. I just want to repeat what you just said. Happiness is what you are. So it's a state of being. And pleasure are those spikes. And those are the highs that people chase after. But happiness is accessible anytime, anywhere, right now.
You just nailed it. Beautifully said. I mean, really beautifully said. It's like, yes, happiness is, it's not a lifestyle status. It's not even a state of emotion or a state of mood, which is what most of us assume. It's a state of being. It's not even a state of mind, although a state of mind will kind of lead you there a little, right? It's a state of no mind. It's a state of being itself. And that state of being, you can kind of think of like when you go to a movie, watch a movie, and the movie, we get all caught up in the characters and the action. It's so fun to watch. It's all scary to watch. And then it's sexy. And then it's gross. And we experience all the emotions. And the one thing that we don't really recognize or really remember very often is that it's all happening on this screen. That screen that basically absorbs or allows you to see the images on the screen, that screen itself is immovable, unshakable, and indestructible. And it's perfect peace. Okay, that screen. And no matter what happens on the screen, it's untouched really by what happens on the screen. That screen itself is what I would describe as happiness itself. And that screen is inside of you. And so no matter what happens on the surface of your life, the conditions, the circumstances, the thoughts, and the emotions, underneath it all, if you dive deep enough, you'd realize that that screen, this perfect, peaceful aliveness, always exists within you. And you can access that and experience that even as you experience the other things. And you can kind of bring that screen to the forefront of your experience of life instead of letting it always be in the background somewhere. But essentially what happens to most of us is we forget that we're watching a movie, essentially, and we get so caught up in all the action and all the drama, and we go chasing, you know, and we don't really spend enough time just basically
being. Well, I think what you said, like the addicted to pleasure, not happiness, is interesting because I can see why people now tie happiness to relationships mm-hmm. because there's a lot of pleasure, you know, when things are going good, it's yes. good. You mentioned your clients a lot of times come to you with relationships when they're unhappy or they're happy. Why do you think this is such at the forefront of people's perception of happiness?
Yeah, well, It's sort of easy to forget that you are happiness and then to go seeking for that which you are without realizing it or recognizing, right? So another way to say that essentially is that, you know, we seek in our illusory or erroneous perception or belief that we're half of a person or just part of a person, that we're not whole, that there's mm-hmm. something lacking or missing in our lives. We go to yeah. fill that up with something, anything. And usually, you know, another person just seems so, it's like such a seductive idea. It's like, why not be with somebody else? Why not be in a relationship? It just sounds fantastic. But if you look real closely, you'll notice that the challenge is that we haven't really come to enjoy or love our own aloneness. And we haven't dived deep enough within ourselves to discover that whatever it is we're looking for another person, we already have within ourselves, right? So even the experience of love, like I don't need a partner to feel love. You know, mm-hmm. I don't need a partner to feel happiness. And in fact, sometimes having a partner is the one thing that gets in the way of you feeling the love that's inherently and intrinsically yeah. inside you, or the happiness that's inside you, or the peace that's inside of you. And so, you know, it's understandable, and we all have done it, and we'll all continue to do it. We forget for a period of time that what we're looking for is not only within us, but is us. This is also where the science helps out a lot. You know, science has basically found that happy people essentially have better relationships of all kinds. Okay, they have happier relationships of all kinds, which makes sense. They also get married earlier, stay married longer, and are happier in all the relationships, whether they're married or not. They also, by the way, are rated as more attractive than their unhappy counterparts. And it's not because they're actually physically more attractive. It's that mm-hmm. happiness itself is attractive, right. literally and figuratively, right?
Yes.
So
yes.
the challenge and opportunity is to find a way to be happy without a partner so that you can one day attract a partner more quickly and be happier in the relationships.
Yes. Absolutely. We actually had this really great quote that I want to read, that it was, the best advice I heard was to find someone who supports your happiness, not someone you need to depend on it. What are your thoughts about this quote? And like, how can people start looking more inward?
I love that so much. I mean, I heard Warren Buffett say something really interesting one time. They asked him, what's the best piece of business advice you could possibly give? And he said, to make sure you're very selective and choosy about your partner, you know, that your romantic mm-hmm. partner, you know, who you choose for a husband mm-hmm. or a wife or boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever. I feel that so strongly because generally what happens in relationships is that we like to think that if we're happy enough, we can pull the other person up to our level of happiness. But
yeah.
that rarely, if ever, happens. What mostly happens is that the least happy person brings you down to their level, right? And so the first thing is to recognize that happiness, relationships aren't designed to make you happy.
Right. That's like a big burst for people.
I mean, they can enhance your happiness. You know, if you're happy already, they can mm-hmm. enhance your happiness. But they're not designed to make you happy. They're designed to make you aware. And in your awareness, you can become happier, a lot happier. But that's the reason, the challenge and the opportunity with relationships is not to look for happiness in them. Because again, you're outsourcing this thing that actually you are infinitely rich and wealthy in.
Right. I think Sheryl Sandberg says something very similar also about, you know, the partner is your greatest indication of success is who you choose as a partner. And I think I saw like a study somewhere that the most happy people, just overall, again, there's probably a lot of factors, were people that were married in good relationships, what they consider good relationships. And then next was people that were single. And then at the bottom were people that were in relationships that were did not make them happy.
It's so good, Julie. Like, you're right, you know, so a lot of the science, what it essentially says is that, let's take marriage as an example, but you could take any relationship really. So most of us assume you get in a relationship, you get married, of course I'm gonna be happier. I love this person, they're great to me, whatever.
Right.
Great. But what happens with most people, almost everyone, is that you experience a small bump increase in your happiness when you first get married or into that relationship. And then as soon as that honeymoon phase is over, you experience a decline, and that mm-hmm. happiness goes back to its original baseline level for a while. And then depending on whether or not you all get along very well, it will either, you know, stay at the baseline level or dip way below that, right? And so the one of the key, you know, sort of factors in a happy relationship is, of course, is two happy, independent, like independently happy individuals. Mm-hmm. That's critical. The other thing is that it's the relationships where each partner sees the other in really positive light. And so they mm-hmm. generally see that, we call it positive illusion, but they see their partner, each of them sees the other in a way that is better than that person's five best friends, right? So they see them in a positive light. And so it's interesting. So entertaining this positive, we'll call it an illusion, but for them it's reality. Entertaining that positive illusion about the other is extraordinarily helpful in you having a happy relationship.
I want to dive into this even more, but before we do, let's take a quick break to hear from our partners.
Staying present in a relationship might be really difficult sometimes because it's not just one date. It's every night on the couch, every meal, every, wait, what did you just say? Moment. That's where Brick comes in. Brick is a simple device that helps you put boundaries around your phone so you can actually be with your partner. You just pair the device to your phone and it locks distracting apps, and suddenly you're not half listening while trying to reply to texts or checking Instagram. Now, it's not about cutting out technology. It's about choosing presence during dinner, before bed, or when you're having a real conversation that deserves your full attention. Because relationships don't fall apart from one big thing. They fade from too many small moments of distraction.
If you want to be more present with your partner, check out Brick. Go to getbrick.app/POR show for 10% off. That's getbrick.app/POR show.
There is this other argument that happiness is only felt when you've experienced the opposite, right? People who feel like, when I go through sadness, I can really appreciate the happiness. What is your opinion about that? Is that something that we should take as the truth?
So it is true that contrast can make life really beautiful. It's the sour that makes the sweet that much sweeter. And so there's no question about that. And that also is, we call it duality, right? Mm-hmm. So the world we live in is duality. It's like, how do we know off without on? How do we know black without white? You know, it's kind of difficult to kind of know these things or have these experiences. And that being said, the happiness I'm talking about is really a non-dual experience. And so anything that you perceive or sense or think through the mind is going to always be full of these opposites, like this yin and this yang. And it's great and it's beautiful and like enjoy it all. No question about it. But I would say that happiness, again, is different from pleasure, which is always counterbalanced by pain. And it's even not, I wouldn't even call it the opposite of unhappiness. The happiness I'm talking about is something that is, it has no opposite. It's the very ground of your being, right? So some people might even refer to it as God or consciousness itself or awareness itself. Again, just words. But you're absolutely right in the sense that tough things can make good things feel that much better. And adversity can play an incredibly important role in our lives because it helps us appreciate things that we didn't appreciate before or as much before. It helps us prioritize relationships. So yes, you'll definitely want to do what you can to appreciate the adversity and the contrast in your life, but also please try to explore this idea, really this experience, that happiness is something that transcends duality. It's something that exists as the very ground of your being.
Fascinating.
So I feel like UA and I are real big proponents of mindset, like kind of what you were just saying around, you know, how do you start to see things in a different way? And I guess my question for you is, do you think that's the key to finding happiness? Or do you think there's other tools and techniques that you've used along the way?
Yeah, there's so many tools and there's so many exercises. I would say they kind of fall into like, I guess they're four buckets, but I'm sure we could break it down into 1,000 buckets. But I would say, the one is just, you basically have four tools at your disposal. It's like actions that you take, okay? So you want to do everything you can to try to take the happier actions, okay? And sometimes you can't always tell what the happier action is until you've played it all the way out. It's like for lots of us, drinking a lot of alcohol all the time feels like a great idea. But then you have the hangover, right? Then you have the hangover. You're like, okay, that's not going to be a activity that can do.
There's
all the time.
Duality with that, yes.
There's lots of duality, right? So happy activities or actions, but then there's and happy people or loving people, supportive people, and then there's like you said, happy sort of mindset. We'll call it that. And so that's all about telling a better feeling story based in truth about everything in your life. So it's like if you have $0 in your bank account, are you broke or is there only up from here? Right. Or if it's raining outside, is it a bad day? Or is it simply raining, right? And it'll be sunny tomorrow, right? So mindset, absolutely. Now, that being said, that will take you but so far. It'll take you to the very edge, right where you can sort of begin to actually dive all the way into happiness. So the thing I discovered about, let's say, positive thinking, even the most positive thinking will not give you a perfectly positive life. There's still going to be this contrast, right? And if you notice underneath most positive thinking, there's still this level of anxiety, just this low level of anxiety, which, right? And so it's kind of like still, it's better than negative thinking, way better, but it's still not quite it. And so you sort of take this leap. And this is where we get expressions like the peace that passeth understanding, right? Mm-hmm. Or the eternal sunshine of the spotless mind, right? It's a speaking to this happiness that exists as a state of no mind, as a state of no thought. And that's kind of where meditation comes in very handy, or practicing the presence, or all these other terms that some of people use. But there is a happiness that can begin with happy activities and happy actions, and then lead to happy people and also lead to happy mindsets. But then there's another step that you ultimately want to take that is beyond the mindset.
So baby steps first, open that door, or just,
yes,
I don't know, push it a little bit, and then eventually it'll fully open.
Exactly, exactly. And what you'll notice is that, like, that final step, like, think about that moment right before you fall asleep at night, right? There's like, you're so tired, you don't want to move your body, you're so tired, you don't have many thoughts left. It's like right before you slip off to sleep, like that one moment right before you, it's so blissful. That moment of no thought, you're not thinking anything, you're not doing anything, you're just so comfortable in your comforter and your pillows and all that good stuff, and you're not really, and then you're sleeping. And then notice for 8 hours, maybe you dream a little bit, but you feel so refreshed in the morning. And besides that dreaming part, most dreamless sleep is nothing but no thought, but it's so blissful. Right? So we all have that experience. In fact, we're more familiar with that experience than we are anything else. But our mind will convince us otherwise most days.
I guess the only kind of counter I'd have to that is sometimes when you're doing nothing, is that always the best state either?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, so, if you're not taking any action, is that a good thing?
Right. So here's the beautiful thing. And I love that point you make. So we sometimes think of being as opposite from doing. So it's like, just do nothing. We think of it as the opposite of doing something. But I would argue that there's a way of being that includes doing, right? So it's like, it's like the runner who can run super fast, but inside, in their mind, in their heart, they're perfectly still. There's a relaxedness about it. They're totally at ease, right? So we're talking about that. It's more like flow state. It's like
flow state. Yeah.
Yes. Right. It's possible to be totally at ease within your own skin, totally at ease with the world on the inside, and not to be lost in discursive thinking and obsessive compulsive over analytical thinking, and to just be on the inside while you take massive action on the outside. But your happiness doesn't depend on the massive action you take, and it doesn't depend on the results of the massive action you take, because you're still always resting inside. That's what we call resting in God, right? Or resting in presence. It's taking action, sure, why not? But it's not being lost in the action. It's like being in the storm, but not letting the storm be in you.
So you had this quote on Instagram again that you don't have to seek happiness. You just have to stop seeking unhappiness. And I love that so much. I'd love for you to dive a little deeper in. But I think when I think of that quote is I think of people that are chasing situationships, for instance, that it's clear that's not bringing them happiness, yet they stick around or they're in a noticeably bad relationship. Why do you think, one, people do this, and how can they stop seeking unhappiness?
So great question. I mean, the first piece is, you know, the brain, beautiful problem-solving instrument, is also a troublemaker. Okay, so the brain is built with all of dozens of biases, okay? And one of the major biases is the negativity bias, which means that the brain operates the way that a sentry of a ship does. Its job is to look for problems to solve and dangers to avoid, to keep you alive. So the brain is built for survival, not necessarily happiness, although it does a pretty good job of that as well. And so what that means is that the problem always gets our attention. And so while we think, oh, there's an opportunity to be happy later, we've actually just identified a problem now, which is like, we're lacking this thing. Maybe it's more money. Maybe it's a partner. Maybe it's a relationship. But the brain has this negativity bias. And so we're always up against this beautiful brain that loves solving problems, but also loves creating problems as much as it loves solving them, right? So that's the first thing. It's kind of like this idea when all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. Well, when all you have is a brain, everything looks like a problem to be solved. So that's really the main sort of crux of what often leads us down paths of sort of unhappiness. And if you look at the rest of nature, I mean, most of nature is perfectly blissful. Like, only human beings make a problem out of their own existence. Like, you ever think about that?
Yeah.
Like, only human beings really kill just to kill, like, because it's coming from, like, there's some unhappiness here. Or like, most animals in the, you know, animal kingdom, they kill to eat, but they don't just kill
survival.
To kill, right? Survival.
Right.
Right? Or whatever. And so just notice the ways in which, yes, we think we're so civilized as human beings, but we're also, right, we also create a problem out of our own existence. And a lot of that is just, you know, we love the brain, but the prefrontal cortex can...
Well, the Also, the problem with a lot of daters is that we think we know what we're looking for, and we mm-hmm. think we know how to gauge if someone's a good partner. So even thinking about the traditional way of setting a barometer, you know, how you would evaluate someone as a partner, people always say, does he make you happy? Does she make you happy? And I think that is the wrong way of thinking about it, because no person can ever make you happy. But I would ask, does this person take away from your happiness?
So good. That's so good. That's so poignant and profound. That's exactly right. You know, it's like, are they supporting you in your happiness, right? They can support you in it. But the greater question, the better question is, yeah, are they taking away from it, right? Do you feel drained? You know, I mean, I think we've all had the experience where it's like, you love someone very much and you feel such relief when they're not around, right? It's like, oh, I love this person, but I feel so stressed and anxious when they're around, and I feel so much relief when they're not around. And so that's also a good sign. But yeah, I love that. I love exactly what you framed it.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think happiness needs to come from within 100%. But I do think being in a happy, healthy relationship, I use the word happy, but in a healthy relationship can make you happy. I feel it. Like, I guess, is there a counter of that? Like, why, I guess if we're really saying that relationships don't make you happy, why are we all chasing them?
Yeah, so I'll say this, and I love the point you're making. You know, relationships matter. Okay, there's no question. Relationships matter. And when we look at the science, we know that relationships matter almost more than anything else in terms of happiness. The difficulty and the challenge and the sort of misperception that we often have is that social connection that you ultimately want to feel has to come, or should come, or best comes through a romantic relationship. Okay, I would say that friendship is one of the highest forms of relationship in my mind. Like kindness is what I really want. When I talk about love, I talk about kindness. Like, kindness is the highest kind of love from my perspective. And if you think it only comes through, or mostly comes through, or has to exclusively come through a romantic partner, you're setting yourself up for a lifetime of challenges, because it's like hoping that this one person will be this one-stop shop for all of your psychological, emotional, and spiritual needs. And that's a lot. And I would argue that's impossible for anyone else to do that for us when we can't even, or we haven't even done that for ourselves, right? It's like most of us are asking others to do for us what we haven't been able to do for ourselves, which is like fully unconditionally love us. Like, how many people have you met that have fully unconditionally loved themselves, or even fully known themselves? And yet we're asking some stranger whom we haven't met yet to do it, not just today, but forever. I love it. And I want you to experience all of that. I want all of us to experience all of that, if that's our desire. But if I was placing bets, I wouldn't put my money on that.
Well, Julie, also I have some thoughts about what you said, because I've been thinking about this too. Is it chicken or the egg? But I don't actually think it is chicken or the egg. I think we've been thinking about this backwards. When we've been in healthy relationships, we attribute it to our partner and our relationship. When if we really think about the root of it, is because you were happy to begin with.
Right.
So therefore, you are able to recognize it's a healthy relationship. I know I've been in relationships where I was not at a state of happiness, and I couldn't even recognize that it was a good relationship. I wasn't accepting of it. So I think we tend to put so much pressure and, I guess, credit to relationships that we forgot that we are the instigator for how a relationship goes.
Right. I love that. So it's like, yeah, like obviously the person has to be a good partner and contribute. They can't take away from it. But the reason you probably attracted that person in the first place is because you were in a good place.
Exactly.
Boom. Beautifully said. And if you think about it too, it's such a great point. And think about this. Let's say that any of us were in a very happy relationship, and I would argue because we were happy ourselves, and it's easy to attract somebody, you know, happy when we're happy. Happiness loves company, right? But also, you know, think about why or how that relationship didn't last. Now, why would that relationship that was so happy, why would it not last if this other person was the source of our happiness? It makes no sense. Did they just stop deciding to provide the happiness that we are ultimately after? Or is there something else or more going on there? Right. And so that's, you know, some of the questions I ponder later.
Well, what's the answer?
Well, I would say that just the answer is that they're not the source of your happiness. I would say that most people are, you know, are trying hard, but most of us kind of suck at being happy. And we certainly suck at making other people happy. We try hard, but we just don't always know where their itch is. Even when they tell us where their itch is, we don't always know. And not just that, but most of us are wired for self-interest. We just are. Thank God. That lets us off the hook. That lets them off the hook. We want to be wired for self-interest because it means that we can just take care of ourselves. And in our abundance and overflow, money or time or energy or whatever, we can share it with other people. And so we're just not wired to be anybody else's keeper in that specific way in terms of a romantic relationship.
What if you're just not in a happy place? Is it better to postpone dating and work on yourself? Or is it better to meet someone and continuously do the work? Because I feel like we hear a lot of times like you need to work on yourself, but then you can also get into that endless cycle where you're never good enough, right?
Yeah. So I would say it this way. I kind of sometimes say, you know, never go to the grocery store when you're hungry, because you'll only basically buy and collect junk food.
Junk food.
Right?
Uh-huh. Yep.
And never go to the dating pool when you're unhappy, right? Like that's generally going to also end up with some junk experiences in relationships. Now, challenge with that is some of us just feel like we have no other option, or we're just so into it, we just have to do it no matter. And listen, that's perfectly fine too, because I promise you'll have enough experiences and you'll gather enough data points that will eventually lead you back to yourself. Okay. But I would say and argue, try not to go to the dating pool, you know, when you're unhappy. And instead, you really want to make this happiness thing priority, almost a career, not like something you get paid for, but meaning that you want it to be the most important thing in your life, because the only reason you want to date is because you want to feel better for having dated and for having been in a relationship and for having a partner.
Yeah.
You're ultimately after happiness. It's like no matter what you want to accomplish, acquire, achieve, you only want it because you think you'll feel better. That better feeling is what we call happiness. So instead of just routing it through all these different people and places and things, just try to learn to go directly to the source for it. And then I promise, if you can do this one thing, which feels so hard in the beginning, it will make everything else easy in the end. Everything else will become easier. Dating will become easier, and making money will become easier, and saving money will become easier, and staying healthy will become easier. It all becomes easier if you tackle the real thing you're after and the real thing you want first. But most of us don't do that. We put the cart before the horse, and then we're like, you know, 110 years old, and we're like, oh, I only had to live my life happily.
Yep. So well said.
What about, I'm thinking of like maybe times when I wasn't as happy and like attracted certain things. I'm thinking of like kind of the up and down relationships.
Yes.
The ones that have extreme highs and extreme lows. Maybe the ones that you break up, you get back together, you break up. That shit storm. Do you think that is a form of happiness when you're at the extreme high, or is that just inevitably set up for unhappiness?
That's normally not a great sign. It's not a great sign. And I want to say that it is, because it's going to be so much fun and so exciting.
Yeah.
You know, but sounds a little like emotional dysregulation on the part of one or both people, right? It's two folks that, you know, may have not have learned or taught how to emotionally regulate themselves, right? And so they don't know how to self-soothe. And so what that means is it's like this ping-pong ball effect. And so when you're excited, now I'm excited. Now when you're sad, I'm sad. And it just kind of goes 55,000 different directions. So I would say that, no, that feels a little bit emotionally disordered to me. And that doesn't mean that your relationship shouldn't or can't have lots of highs. Generally speaking, I'd say that, you know, that's almost always a sign that things are a little less peaceful than you might want.
What about a less extreme version of that? Let's pare it down to, let's say, early stages of dating. You meet someone, think it's going pretty well. You're not getting the butterflies. We hear this a lot in our group. I don't feel butterflies around this person. I'm not super excited like I was with a previous person. In your personal opinion, which one should we go after? The one that feels steady and calm, or the one that gives you butterflies?
Yeah. So I will say that it's such a great question, and I cannot even pretend to have an answer on that. I would say a couple of things. I would say I love the idea of both. I love the idea of feeling the butterflies, but still feeling really safe in the presence of someone else, where safe. Where like your self-esteem and all that doesn't feel like it's at stake all the time, and your well-being doesn't feel like it's at stake, and the person doesn't make you feel like they're going to just walk away at any point in time or whatever. You know, it's a more of a commitment there in terms of like caring about your psychological and emotional and spiritual well-being kind of thing, right? And that can feel like peace, and yet you can still have the butterflies because you're excited to see them. But so often butterflies, you know, part of it can be attraction, and part of it could be chemistry, right? And sometimes that doesn't feel like it has anything to do with attraction. It's like, why do I have chemistry with this person? I don't necessarily find them so attractive, or vice versa. I find them so attractive, there's no chemistry there. But then there's a third piece of this, which is a little bit more, I guess, concerning, which is like familiarity. So sometimes the reason we feel the things we feel is because they consciously or subconsciously remind us of our parents, particularly a parent whom we had challenges with, or a particular kind of challenge with. And so sometimes we mistake feeling butterflies for familiarity, you know, and so much of what happens in relationships is that without knowing it, it's like we're trying to heal things that happen in our childhood with our parents.
I know.
Right?
I know.
So sometimes the very person that you feel that with, yes, is the last person you should be with.
Rob, I heard this theory that the people who give you butterflies resemble your parents the most. That is the most sick theory I've ever heard, but I believe it. I think it's true. It stems from that familiarity. It's pretty fucked up.
Yeah, no, it is. You know, it's very Freudian. And I would argue that that doesn't have to be everyone. And I would say that the more work you've done to heal whatever unhealed stuff you've experienced in the past, like the more work you've done, the more confident you can be that when you feel the butterflies, it's not about that, right? It's not about that anymore. Right. So that's the question. If you haven't done any work at all, then yeah, probably really strong sign that there's some, you know, associations here with your parents, and you probably need to look into that a little bit. Doesn't mean you can't enjoy it, but generally those things don't always, you know, go perfectly well.
Mm-hmm. So I love this, like, let's not chase things that make us unhappy. But what about those times that inevitably do? Let's say you break up with a partner, or you were really excited about someone and then they ghosted you. It's almost natural to feel unhappy. Are there ways that you can kind of get out of that and start to get happy again? Like, what are some tactics for those situations?
Absolutely. Yeah. So first part is to accept and acknowledge what you feel, and to feel what you feel all the way through. So lots of us try to run from what we're feeling or deny what we're feeling, and that doesn't work. It's like a cancer that just, you know, sort of continues to grow right under your nose. So instead, you want to feel what you're feeling. If you're feeling grief, or you're mourning, or you're sad, or you're feeling insecure, just notice what you're feeling. But instead of feeding what you're feeling with thoughts and with rumination, self-rumination particularly, which is what most of us do. We think that we're processing, but we're mostly just self-ruminating, or we think we're reflecting, but we're just really self-ruminating. And that self-rumination and that sort of discursive thought is just feeding and fueling the very pain that you're experiencing. And so it lasts longer than it normally would. And so instead of going to the brain, you want to go to the body. Where do I feel this sadness, this anxiety, this overwhelm, this disappointment, this loneliness? What do I feel in my body? And then feel into that place in your body, okay? And then when a thought occurs or surfaces, you notice the thought without judgment and just let it go. You come back to the body. And if you want, you can make, this is why meditation, doesn't have to call it meditation. I don't like using that word too often. People get, like, you know, scared away. But the idea essentially is just noticing what you feel and what you think without feeding it, without judging it, and just being with it, right? And that doesn't mean you can't also Swiffer. You can also do your work, right? It doesn't mean that you have to totally stop living, but it just means, you know, spend a little time noticing what you're feeling and allowing yourself to feel what you feel. And I promise, if you don't feed it by continuing to think about it or reliving it or pre-living it, which is what so many of us do, it's like this thing happened and now I'm going to relive it over and over and over again and re-traumatize myself 1,000 times, or I'm going to pre-live it, I'm going to pre-traumatize myself 1,000 more times because I'm afraid it's happening in the future. If you don't do that, you'd be surprised at how quickly those negative, unhealthy, unhappy sort of thoughts and emotions start leaving you alone.
Mm-hmm. That's great. That's a really great tip. And I was going to ask you for another tip. If we're doing like a quick start guide to reconnecting to your happiness, what is something that our listeners can do today? Something simple to start opening that door.
Yeah. So I would say, I'm going to give you like 4 or 5 real quick. I'll be
about
it. Yeah,
even better.
Right?
Even better.
So I'll say,
like, bonus.
Awesome. Number one is those happiness islands. Just create a list. Try to do more of those things. Schedule more of those happiness islands into your life. So those are things, people, places, activities that uplift, inspire, energize you. Number two, happiness deserts. Identify those people, places, activities, and things that drain you. Do everything you can to get those off your plate. That means outsource them, delegate, reduce them, eliminate, automate, or regulate them. In other words, find a way to get them off your plate if you can.
Mm-hmm.
Next thing is, really look into your life. And this is kind of part of the first activity. Be clear. Those people who drain you, you want to do what you can to spend less time with them, or at least, you know, shorter periods of time. You maybe see them more frequently, but, you know, shorter conversations, shorter interactions, you know, keep it short and sweet. And then spend more time with the people that uplift you, inspire you, support you, encourage you. Mm-hmm. Next thing is, start telling better feeling stories about everything and everybody in your life, starting with yourself. No matter what, right? Better feeling, but truthful stories. So we talked about a little bit, like, it, you know, if you have $0, you're not broke. It's only up from here, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the idea. Next, I would say is, and particularly if you struggle with self-love, one of the best things you can do is keep a self-love journal. So every single day, just begin to bullet out 2 or 3 things or more that you genuinely like and appreciate about yourself. It can be anything. It just has to be truthful. Okay. And try to do that every day. The other thing I'll mention in terms of, like, the no thought thing, because I think that's where people get sort of stuck the most, is what I call micro meditations. So micro meditation is just one breath. So I don't know if you've ever been to a meditation class, but it can feel torturous and super annoying. Like, you know, if you've ever done it, it's like the last thing you want to do. But a micro meditation is one breath. And I discovered I could always do one breath. And in the one breath, all you're doing is you're pretending like this moment, no matter where you are, or what you're doing, or who you're with, is the last moment you have on the planet in your life ever. So really be sincere about that. Like, this could be the last moment I have. And so I'm going to milk or juice this one breath for as much joy as I can possibly get out of it. So I'm going to let all my thoughts go. I'm going to breathe from the stomach, through the nose, from the stomach, let all my thoughts go and just try to enjoy it. I've never enjoyed a breath before, right? So you want to do that as often you can remember throughout the day, no matter what else you're doing. That one activity, exercise, micro meditation, has probably been more helpful to me than almost anything else I've done when I've been consistent.
Oh, wow. That's so powerful. I just did it. I love breath work, but I love the context you put around it. Like, it's your last breath on earth, so you better fucking do it right.
Okay, well, this is a great segue into takeaways. There's so many things to unpack here. I think we've come to the consensus that romantic relationships are not the key to happiness. It is from within. That being said, though, I think human connection is essential in life. Like, I think humans are meant to connect with other people. And I think loneliness can be a major reason for unhappiness. So while I think the emphasis might not always have to be on romantic relationships, having relationships in your life is still very, very important. And that is a way that you can, you know, connect with others, but it should never be at the detriment of connecting with yourself.
Mm-hmm. Love that.
Beautiful.
I think my other takeaway is this better feeling story. I love that. We always say positive mindset shift, and I like that too, but I feel like sometimes it feels a little intimidating. And I think at the crux of it, we're saying the same thing, is this better feeling story. It's how can I spin it that I see the good in the situation? So I think rewiring it from that, and I think that terminology, I love it so much because, like you said, it's true. And when you believe it, then you'll start to see it's true, but it is true. It's not like a falsism. It's just choosing to find the more positive part of what's going on in your life.
Love that.
So good. Yes. It's so magical to think about this because it's very similar to my takeaway, Julie, is there's a dotted line between illusion to reality. And you said this earlier, Rob, is what could be seem like an illusion, if you believe it, it is your reality. And I think telling yourself these better stories about your life, your own self-love, will turn that illusion into a reality. I really believe that happiness is our default setting and nobody can take it away from us, only yourself. So I think we need to have a little accountability with our own happiness, that nobody else is causing our happiness or unhappiness except for yourself. And because of that, we just got to scratch a little bit more to find that happiness, but it's there. It's like the first layer of our skin or whatever they call it in those skincare commercials. It's like, just scratch the surface and it's there. You've always had it. Instead of delaying it into the future that you talked about earlier, it's don't postpone happiness. Don't give your future self so much pressure to make your current self happy, because that's not going to happen. It is forever accessible to you, and tap into it whenever you want to. And there are some great tactics that Rob just told us about to tap into the happiness.
Oof. You two are good. You two are good. You're good, really.
Man. You know, it's not our first rodeo.
We have done this. That's right. We have done this before.
I mean, I know you're obviously the happiness expert here, but is there any parting advice or words of wisdom that you would like to leave our listeners with?
Yeah, I just keep it simple. I'd say, you know, think less, live more. Think less, enjoy more. Think less, love more. You know, you don't have to wait for a lover to love. You know, you don't have to wait for a partner to love. You know, you can love the cashier, you know, you can love the person in the mirror. You know what I mean? You can. You can love the kitten. You can love the tree. Like, you can love the sunset. Like, just, you know, love. Don't wait to love. Don't procrastinate. Right. Don't hesitate. You know, don't postpone. Like, love now, live now, enjoy now.
I love that so much. I mean, we always say that to people that are, you know, searching for love. It's, you have love. You've been in relationships before. Even if you haven't been in a ton of romantic relationships, you have a family, you have friends. Those are all relationships. So everyone is capable of love and relationships, whether you're in a relationship or a romantic relationship or not.
So good. I love that. Beautifully said.
1,000%. I'm going to go and make my happiness island and happiness desert list.
I'm going to do that right now. I love it.
I'm going to do that with my partner and see if we have any overlapping islands and deserts. And then we're going to get to action on how to deal with all of that and create more happiness for ourselves. Thank you so much, Rob, for being on our show. If people want to get to know you a little better and learn about your services, where can they find you?
For sure. You can find Happiness from the Inside Out and Love from the Inside Out soon at Barnes & Noble and Amazon and everywhere else great books are sold. You can find me at my website at CoachRobMack.com. And you can also find me on most all social media platforms, probably most consistently Instagram at RobMack.official.
Awesome. When does your next book come out?
It's going to come out the end of this year. That's okay. Fingers crossed, but it should be December. Yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. Very exciting.
Yay. We'll definitely promote it to our community as well. I'm sure they would love to read that.
So appreciate you all. Truly appreciate you.
And if you haven't done so yet, subscribe to The Psychology of Relationships today so you don't miss an episode. And we'll see you all next week.
Bye.